Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 14, Text 46. Have the speakers been chanting the Sanskrit and doing the word for word, or they're just going right to the translation? Archita Prabhu. Have the speakers been chanting the Sanskrit and doing the word for word, or just going right to the translation? As I like, huh? Okay. All right, I'll try. Ya idam bhagavata. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's do the word for word. That's going to be. Ya, anyone who. Idam, this. Bhagavata, by exalted devotees. Sabhajita, greatly worshipped. Abhadata, pure. Guna, whose qualities. Karmana, and activities. Rajashe, of the great saintly king. Bharatasya, of Bharat Maharaj. Anucharitam, the narration. Swastiayanam, the abode of auspiciousness. Ayusyam, which increases one's duration of life. Danyam, increases one's fortune. Yasasyam, bestows reputation. Everybody listen very carefully as we're doing this, because I'm going to ask a question about this at the end, okay? Svargya, gives promotion to the higher planetary systems. The goal of the karmis. Upavargyam, gives liberation from this material world and enables one to merge into the supreme. The goal of the Gyanis. Va, or. Ashrunoti, always hears. Following the path of devotional service. Akyasyati, describes for the benefit of others. Abhinandanti, glorifies the characteristics of devotees and the Supreme Lord. Cha, and. Sarva, all. Eva, certainly. Asisa, blessings. Atmana, for himself. Asaste, he achieves. Na, not. Kanchana, anything. Parata, from anyone else. Iti, thus. Okay, so the $64,000 question. And translate that into devotional terms. Who? Nobody? Yeah, but it can't be somebody with a book, okay? From hearing the word for word, is there anybody who's not book holders or disqualified who can tell us what is the translation? Bonabata was raising his hand, but it quickly went down there. Sukadev, you could do it. Come on. Can anybody? That's why, because that's everybody. Please listen very carefully to this word for word. Can anybody, from hearing that word for word, give us an idea what is this verse about? Go ahead. Okay, try. Let's see.
Desires to know to be in person, or one desires to know the devotion of sin.
Let's have a big round of applause for that devotee, folks. Woo! That is really close. Did you read the chant before, or did you actually get it just from hearing just now? Okay. I was going to say, man, this guy is sharp. Okay, well, let's read it here. Translation. Devotees interested in hearing and chanting Shravanam Kirtanam regularly discuss the pure characteristics of Bharat Maharaj and praise his activities. If one submissively hears and chants about the all-auspicious Maharaj Bharat, one's lifespan and material opulences certainly increase. One can become very famous and easily attain promotion to the heavenly planets or attain liberation by merging into the existence of the Lord. Whatever one desires can be attained simply by hearing, chanting, and glorifying the activities of Maharaj Bharat. In this way, one can fulfill all his material and spiritual desires. One does not have to ask anyone else for these things, for simply by studying the life of Maharaj Bharat, one can attain all desirable things. So he was really good. But of course, we're going to have to put an asterisk next to your name there when you on the records, you know. Because you see, but that was good. Okay, here's Prabhupada's, Srila Prabhupada's purport. It says, the forest of material existence is summarized in the 14th chapter. The word Bhavatavi refers to the path of material existence. And hold on to your seats, everybody, because we're going to go through the whole thing right now. Prabhupada's going to actually give us like a review now of all the different aspects of material existence that were discussed in this chapter. Okay, it says, the merchant is the living entity who comes to the forest of material existence to try to make money for sense gratification. The six plunderers. The six plunderers are the senses: eyes, ears, nose, tongue, touch, and mind. The bad leader is the diverted intelligence. Intelligence is meant for Krishna consciousness, but due to material existence, we divert all our intelligence to achieve material facilities. Everything belongs to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but due to our perverted mind and senses, we plunder the property of the Lord, and engage in satisfying our senses. The jackals and tigers in the forest are our family members, and the herbs and creepers are our material desires. The mountain cave is our happy home, and the mosquitoes and serpents are our enemies. The rats, beasts, vultures, and different types of thieves who take away our possessions, and the Gandharvapura is the phantasmagoria of the body and home. The will-o'-the-wisp is our attraction for gold and its color. And material residence and wealth are the ingredients for our material enjoyment. The whirlwind is our attraction for our wife. And the dust storm is our blinding passion experienced during sex. The demigods control the different directions. And the cricket is the harsh words spoken by our enemy during our absence. The owl is the person who directly insults us. And the impious trees are impious men. The waterless river represents atheists who give us trouble in this world and the next. The meat-eating demons are the government officials, and the pricking thorns are the impediments of material life. The little taste experienced in sex is our desire to enjoy another's wife. And the flies are the guardians of women, like the husband, father-in-law, mother-in-law, and so forth. The creeper itself is women in general. The lion is the wheel of time, and the herons, crows, and vultures are the so-called demigods, pseudo-swamis, yogis, and incarnations. All of these are too insignificant to give one relief. The swans are the perfect brahmanas, and the monkeys are the extravagant sudras engaged in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. The trees of the monkeys are our households, and the elephant is ultimate death. Thus, all the constituents of material existence are described in this chapter. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 5th canto, 14th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Material World as the Great Forest of Enjoyment. Not exactly a travel brochure trying to attract one to come to the material world, this chapter. But very powerful. But, you know, the thing is, we need this. We need to hear this type of a vivid description of how, you know, of all the negative aspects of this material existence. Why is that? Well, Prabhupada explains that and one purport in the Bhagavad Gita, 13th chapter. I think it's text 8 through 13. In one paragraph, he says, unless one has a pessimistic outlook towards material life, one has no impetus to make advancement in spiritual life. So this is to help us develop and maintain a pessimistic outlook towards material life. Because the tendency, unfortunately, is to the opposite. You know, the tendency of the conditioned soul is to have an optimistic outlook towards material life. You know, to think that, oh, we can enjoy. You know, we can enjoy. And as before the actual attempt to enjoy, there's the mentality of that it is possible. You know, people are thinking we can enjoy. Like one poet, I don't know if Prabhupada quoted this or not, he said, hope springs eternal from the human breast. In other words, you know, people are always thinking this hope, I can become happy. Or as another more contemporary, I don't know if you wouldn't call him a poet, I don't know what you call him, he said, there's a sucker born every moment. You know, and that's the nature of the conditioned soul, that we're always thinking we can enjoy. And so we have to hear powerful messages like this so we can get it through our thick skulls that actually we can enjoy here in this material world. Prabhupada once said that trying to make the Westerner's devotee was like trying to straighten a dog's tail. Anybody ever seen that or tried that? You know, the dog has his tail is always curly, and you try to straighten it, and as soon as you let and you get straight, and as soon as you let go, it's just crooked again. You see? So, in order to straighten a dog's tail, practically you have to, you know, go and hold it straight, and that's what we have to do with our own minds. That's why we have to be hearing like this, you know, so comprehensive, extensively, and about the negative features of the material world, because we just have this tendency to just revert back to the material, you know, to desire material enjoyment. It's just the natural tendency of the conditioned soul. Just like I've given this example in classes before, but I'll just mention it briefly here because I think it's a good example. Just like if you have a car, okay, and the wheel alignment's off. So when you're driving down a road, even that road's completely straight, you know, if your wheel alignment's off, as soon as you take your hands off the steering wheel, that car is going to go zoop one side or the other. It's just going to, you know, I've had that experience. Maybe some of you others have also had that experience. It's just like, you know, within seconds, you're basically off the road. So what do you have to do? You have to steer it. You have to steer that car. So, and especially in Kali Yuga, you know, our minds are like that. You know, our minds are influenced predominantly by the modes of passion and ignorance. So it's like being in the car with this, you know, the wheel alignment's off. Unless you're on top of it, you're off the road. See, so in the same way, you know, we're trying to become devotees, we're trying to do spiritual life, but our minds are influenced by the modes of passion and ignorance. Unless we're on top of our mind, unless we have a program for, you know, keeping our mind, controlling our mind, which we'll talk about in a second, you know, engaging in Krishna service, you're off the road, so to speak. You know, you're out. You're out there. You're out of the movement. You know, because the mind will just zoop, it'll just take you right out of this, you know, Krishna consciousness movement. See? So we have to be vigilant. And that was discussed in this canto as well earlier, how, you know, you have to never think the mind is trained and controlled and that it's, you know, you can just kind of not pay attention to it. No. Even the great elevated devotees, they know that you always have to be, you know, careful of the mind and watch it and make sure it's engaged properly in Krishna's service. I mean, even if you, and there's very few rare cases of this, even say you're predominantly in the mode of goodness, which is like, would be the equivalent of a car, the wheel alignment is good. Like the car I drive now, wheel alignment's okay. So if I'm driving down a straight road, I could take my hands off the steering wheel and I could pretty much leave my hands off the steering wheel for some, you know, 15, 20, 30 seconds even, and the thing just keeps going straight. But the problem is, roads aren't straight. Roads do curve. There are curves in the road, you see? So you have to steer it. I mean, it's not like, even if you have a mind in the mode of goodness, it's not like you're still in the material world and you're still going to, you know, be confronted with situations which require using intelligence to control the mind. It's not like just because somebody's, you know, how would you say it, predominantly in the mode of goodness that it's going to be a cakewalk. No, you have to just, any car has to be steered. Even if the wheel alignment's perfect, you have to steer. So in the same way, in order to make advancement in Krishna consciousness, spiritual life, we have to become, as Prabhupada was saying just this past Sunday, we have to become Shastra Chakshush, which means you have to be seeing through the eyes of the scriptures. Remember he made that point about how, as devotees, we don't see through the eyes, we see through the ears. And actually, we see through the intelligence, because, you know, when you stop and think about it, you're hearing, but you're hearing the knowledge from the Shastras, and that's what we're using to see. You see, Shastra Chakshus means really also seeing through the intelligence of the sadhus, guru, sadhu, and Shastra. You know, what we, the Shabda, Shabda Brahma, you know, the perfect knowledge that's coming to us from those three sources, guru, sadhu, and Shastra. So we have to become Shastra Chakshus, and not Indriya Chakshus, not seeing through the senses, you know, the senses and the mind is dictating, you know, how to, you know, enjoy. And if we listen to that, then we're heading off the road, so to speak. So once again, the reason why we have to repeatedly hear these messages about how negative material life is it's to counteract our tendency to repeatedly desire material enjoyment. You see, it's just like on one lecture I heard he was describing, it's like a tug of war. You know, he actually gave that example. You know, everybody knows what that is. You know, you're in the middle, and one rope is being pulled one way, and, you know, Krishna's pulling you through the scriptures. Guru, Shadu, and Shastri is trying to pull us closer to him, but the mind, the materialist mind, is like on the other side of the rope trying to pull us back. Actually, Prabhupada, on one occasion, right here in Los Angeles, he said that when we're first trying to, 1973, when we're trying to make advancement in Krishna consciousness, at first, he said, Maya will test you very severely. And I can't remember the exact words, but it was something to the point that she's a pure devotee, and her job is to make sure that only people who are very genuine about serving Krishna get to be in the association of Krishna, and that's no nonsense person can come and disturb him. So he said that, you see. So that's, you know, what's going on. That's another part of the reason why we have such a challenge to control this mind. Because it's Maya's job to make sure that only people who are completely sincere actually are readmitted into the association of Krishna. Okay? So we have to control the mind. You know, we have to control the mind. And that's why we're hearing repeatedly and constantly about how, you know, the negative aspects of material life, so to give us that impetus. But now, controlling the mind, of course, as we all know, does not mean repressing it. You know, Prabhupada was not very supportive of that program. He gave the example, just like a child. If a child is very disobedient, sometimes the parent might say, okay, now you go sit down in the corner. Just sit there. Don't do anything. You know, time out. Just go and just stay in your room and don't do anything. You know, that's what you do when somebody's very disobedient like that. Papa would make the point, but if the child's a little bit, you know, more intelligent or cooperative, then you could give it something positive to do. And in that way, it could keep it from being in mischief. So that's the program that Prabhupada would recommend for controlling the mind. The mind is actually best controlled, or effectively controlled, because that other program doesn't work, you know, by engaging it in Krishna's service. We're just like getting back to that example. If you have a child, it's only a matter of time. You can't have a child just sit and do nothing for very long. I mean, even if you're very severe and strict, it just can't do it. That's just not the nature of kids. They can't just sit and do nothing. So the same thing with the mind. It requires engagement. It can't just be stopped. You know, so that we have to learn have a program for nicely engaging our mind in devotional service. And if we do like that, by doing like that, we will gain the strength to not engage in material sense gratification. Here, right here in Los Angeles, 1973, this is an excerpt from a lecture Prabhupada gave. He said, on this point, he said, instead of becoming Krishna's servant, we are servants of so many things. We are servant of our senses and sense activities, kam, krodha, lobha, moha. Actually, the whole world is serving the senses. Servant of the senses, godas. That's an interesting sentence. I mean, you could place, you know, you could take that and put it as a caption. If you had a picture of the whole world and all the people in the world, you could actually take that and put it as a caption. He says, actually, the whole world is serving the senses. Servant of the senses. Go das. That is, in essence, what is going on here in this material world. People are just simply serving their senses. They're go das. Actually, there's two types of, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about there's two types of living entities. There's the conditioned and the non-conditioned. This is another division. There's the Godas and the Goswami. And unfortunately, most 99.99% of the human population in this world are Godas. But the idea, that's the program. It looks at to look at it, you might think, oh, so many things are going on. But in essence, all that's going on is Godasism. You know, it's Godasism. People, they're also concerned about the spread of communism and the spread of socialism and fascism. But actually, they don't even know what the real ism that it's Godasism is the real problem. Servant of the senses. So we have to try to become Goswamis. And Prabhupada goes on to say, but if we engage the senses in the service of Krishna, then we shall no longer remain the servant of the senses. We shall be the master of the senses, because we shall not allow our senses to be engaged otherwise. That strength we will get. Then we will be safe. You see? So by, how's that verse go? Sarvo pati vanir muktam Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uchite, that when we engage the senses and the service of the master of the senses, then that's the solution to the whole problem. Vishayavanivartante Neha Harasya Dehina Rasavarjam Asopiasya Palam Drishvanavartate. By the embodied soul may be restricted from sense gratification, but that desire, inclination remains. But when he's engaged properly in devotional service, then palam drishta navartate, he gets a higher taste. So that's what we have to do to control the senses, engage them nicely in Krishna's service. And to that end, it's Prabhupada was very liberal, and Prabhupada was very broad-minded about how we could do this. It's not like, not only was Prabhupada not recommending that to control the senses, that we just kind of like sit down and do nothing like, you know, the yogis or the gyanis or something like that. But also he wasn't stereotyped in the way he presented devotional service to us. Like, for instance, Prabhupada, he wasn't trying to have us, for instance, like sit and chant 64 rounds sitting in the temple room. He understood that, okay, I'm trying to make devotees out of Westerners, and they're a bit restless. And everybody knows that story about how initially Prabhupada, gave the instruction, okay, chant 64 rounds. And then the devotees came back and said, Prabhupada, I don't know if we can do that. Then chant 32 rounds. And they came back and they said, well, we're kind of having a tough time with that. And they go, okay, 16 rounds, but no less. So Prabhupada adjusted things to engage the restless, Westerners, who are predominantly influenced or more influenced, say, by the modes of passion and ignorance than maybe some, people in India. I don't know. But so in this way, Prabhupada, he gave us a lot of, scope for engaging favorably in devotional service. And, he wasn't into having us, kind of shutting us down, but rather allowing us to engage whatever we had going in Krishna's service. There was one very nice comment he made here in, once again, here in Los Angeles. At the end, this is at the conclusion of a lecture he gave here in 1973, and he was making this point about how, Westerners or the Americans, he was talking to the devotees right here, should just add Krishna to their lives, and then everything would work out. Prabhupada also, he was very fond of quoting Rupa Goswami, who has that, is that verse, how's it going? I know the Manakrishna Navasayat. Yena Tena Prakarena Manakrishna Navasayat. That somehow or another, we have to engage our minds in Krishna's service. And then the ability to follow, Sarve Vidhi Nasedasyo Etayo Eva Kinkara, the ability to follow all the other rules and regulations will automatically follow. So somehow or another, we have to engage our mind in devotional service, engage ourselves in devotional service. And to that end, Prabhupada made this point on one occasion in 1973. He says, just like zero has no value. But as soon as you put one before zero, it becomes ten immediately. Immediately ten. Another zero, hundred. Another zero, thousand. Similarly, this janma, so long you remain intoxicated with it, it is all zero. But as soon as you put Krishna, it becomes ten, hundred, thousand, million, Yes, he went. That is the opportunity. So you have got this opportunity, you American boys and girls. You have got this opportunity. You have got zeros. Referring to, you know, we have different type of material options. You have got zeros. Put Krishna. You become ten. Yes. Thank you very much. See? So Prabhupada was, you know, he saw that, okay, engage your situation, you know, your good karma in Krishna's service. And in this way, turn turn that material, what could be a material, disability, or it could be something, a disadvantage, turn it into an advantage by engaging in Krishna's service. Right? And actually, there's a verse someplace in the Bhagavatam, first canto, where Narada Muni is instructing Vyasadeva. He says, "Oh, good soul, does not a thing apply therapeutically? Cure a disease which was caused by the very same thing." See, so that's the idea, you know. Thing applied therapeutically will cure a disease which is caused by the very same thing. Okay? Material opulence, which is a disease, really. Prabhupada, in that same lecture, earlier in that same lecture, he was pointing out that why is it that, you know, that these people have such a difficult time taking the Krishna consciousness? And he was pointing out that because they're intoxicated. They're intoxicated with their material opulence. He said, this intoxication will be finished. It is within the time limit. It is not going to continue. That is called illusion. See? So people are intoxicated. That's the problem with, you know, being material opulence. It's intoxicating. You know? But if we're able to, by Krishna's mercy, engage this material opulence in his service, then it can be transformed from a disadvantage, you know, something that which makes it harder for us to approach Krishna, spiritual life, something which will, you know, accelerate that process and make it even, you know, easier, like that. So, in this way, devotional service is. One verse in the Bhagavad Gita where I think it's right towards the beginning of the ninth chapter, it says how this knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. You know, Raja Vidya Raja Guyam, Pavitram Idamutamam, Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam, Sushukam, Kartamavyam. And it gives direct perception of the self by realization is everlasting and joyfully performed. So it's joyfully performed because, you know, it's so practical. We can engage our whatever our psychophysiological makeup is, you can engage it, you know, in Krishna's service. It's a lot of fun. I'll give you an example of how things can be fun and how you can. It's a small example, but it's kind of interesting. I think I mentioned in the last class I gave that I'm having a lot of fun lately distributing Bhagavad Gita's using this, taking advantage of the popularity of this movie Avatar. You know? So just like Papa once said, thank you to Lord Krishna for enlightening Sumati Maharaji for making all these nice arrangements. You know, and he had got on the Jaladuta there. Says thank you to Lord Krishna for enlightening James Cameron for coming up with this movie. It's a lot of fun. I say to people, I say, excuse me, have you seen that? Oh, you know, I stop and do my normal thing, and I say, hey, by the way, did you see that film Avatar? And they go, yes, no, whatever. You know, a lot of people have seen it. I say, well, what did you think? Did you like it? And most people thought, yeah, it was really good film. I say, actually, the idea came from this book. And they look at me like, what are you talking about? You know? And I say, yeah, sure, here, let me show you. I turn to the glossary, and I show them the word avatar. It says, avatar, one who descends, a partially or fully empowered incarnation of God who comes for a particular mission, like that. I usually just read them that first part, one who descends. And I say, yeah. An avatar is a person that comes from the spiritual world into the material world to, you know, help people, to enlighten people, to deliver people like that. I say, so, you know, and I show them the picture of the Das Avatar, which is in all the Bhagavad Gitas. And I say, here, these are some of the avatars that are, you know, that people are aware of in India. I say, well, you know, friends, that's Buddha. Here's Buddha. You've heard of Buddha, right? And they go, yeah. I say, yeah, Buddha was an avatar. Then I show them the picture of Ram, and I say, here's Ram. Ram, you heard of Ram? And some people say yes, some people no. And then I point to Krishna, and I say, and I think the movie had something to do with Krishna. I tell them, I haven't seen the movie, but I think it had something to do with Krishna. And they look at me, and I say, because, you know, what, all those, weren't those people in the movie blue? And they go, yeah, they were blue. And I say, yeah, well, see, Krishna's blue. And then I said, just out of curiosity, did any of them play a flute? And they go, no, I don't think so. I said, did they wear a flower garland or have a peacock feather in their hair? And they go, no, no, I don't remember that. I say, but it was in like a rural setting, right? I mean, you know, it's like, you know, it's like they lived in harmony with nature. And they say, yeah, yeah, that was a big part of it. I said, yeah, because it doesn't show it in this picture, but actually Krishna lived in a, you know, a farming village. And he used to take care of the calves. And later on, when he got a bit older, he took care of the cows. So, you know, here I am talking about Krishna. And depending upon the person, you can even go on. And I don't think it's really helped me sell more Bhagavad Gita. My numbers are staying about the same, but it's a lot more fun than just talking to people about karma, reincarnation. This is like in the, you know, Chaitanya Charitamrita. I mean, sometimes I was feeling like one of the Mayavadi sannyasis out there, you know, Brahman. It's kind of like, it's nice to be able to say something directly about Krishna. And, you know, sometimes I'll mention to him, I say, yeah, you know, Krishna is called Avatari, which means he's the origin of all the avatars. Actually, all the other avatars come from him. So you're actually, you know, getting right into the philosophy and everything, and it fits right in there. It's really, you know, it's kind of, they can relate to it because, they saw the film or they heard about the film and it's popular. So in this way, I'm trying to, you know, be a bit, talk about Krishna and be a bit more Krishna conscious out on book distribution. That's just one small example. But just talking about preaching in general, can somebody see the clock? I can't see the time. Okay, good. So I just want to give people an update on some of the different preaching developments that I've mentioned in previous classes. One is... Well, first I'll tell about one new one. Two Saturdays ago, I went out with Krishna Namacharya and Sachi Dulal, and we were doing shop to shop on Prairie, which is getting down, you know, it's in like El Segundo over by the airport, and we were getting down around Prairie and Imperial, and we went into this one place. We were doing, you know, the shops, and most of it was Latino, Hispanic, but these neighborhoods were all mixed. So we went into this motel. And motels, if you ever go and shop the shop, what you do is when you go up to the office, you say, I'd like to speak to Mr. Patel. And you got better than a 60 or 70% chance of getting Mr. Patel. Because practically, you know, most of them are owned by an Indian family and from Gujarat, and the Patels. But and even if they say, well, there's no Patel, you just say, oh, must be the other one, you know. You can't lose. But anyway, so this particular occasion, we went in there, and sure enough, we went to the office, and I said, you know, he was wanting to go to all the rooms. I said, no, just go to the office and ask for Mr. Patel. So we did that, and sure enough, it was a Mr. Ramesh Patel. And so we started talking, and it worked out this man was a life member. He was a member here from way back in the early days. Then when they built another Indian temple out in wherever it was, out that direction. He started going to that one. He was a member of the board. But he had one problem. He had his son was like, not at all into being a Hindu. You know, not at all. His son was about 30 years old, and he just was like totally rebellious against his father, his whole mood and everything. So he was trying to get his son to come down and meet us. His son wouldn't even come down and meet us, you know, because he just thought, what is this Hindu stuff? I don't want to know about it. You know, his son was into going skiing and not at all. So anyway, finally, he decided to give a very nice donation. You know, he gave a very generous donation. And he wanted his son to give it to us. So he took us upstairs, and he handed the envelope to his son. We handed him the book. He actually, you know, kind of almost forced his son to do it. And his son, he had his son give us the envelope. And so he would get the benefit, which was nice, you know. Anyway, so Sachi Dulal, formerly Silesh, he lives over in that area, so he popped in there again, you know, later in the week, and he dropped off some prasadam, and he gave the fellow like a set of japa beads. I mean, he just tried to just be nice to him because he could see that, you know, the guy he was the full quid. I mean, he wasn't like crazy in any way or anything like that, but he just was not all into his whole father's mood of, you know, being religious and especially Hinduism. You know, when he didn't understand one single bit of it, you know, why should he have faith in something he had no idea what, you know, it didn't make any sense to him at all. So, because that, you know, that was his exposure up till that point. So anyway, so somehow or another, he got him to say that he would come. So they came. They came here, not this Sunday, but the Sunday before, they actually came. They came on, I think it was Gopurnim, as a matter of fact. And, you know, his son was really impressed. I mean, his son was like, you know, by... I mean, if you were to ask him, I guess he'd say he was an out-and-out atheist. But his son was really impressed by what he saw here. You know, and his son was actually paying more attention and getting into it more than his father. That was the far-out thing. You know, his son was really impressed. He's looking around and he's seeing, hey, wait a second, this looks pretty cool. I mean, you know, here's like people from all different backgrounds, all different ages, all different everything. You know, and they're kind of like having a good time. And this is all, you know, he'd never experienced anything like that before. So his son was really nice. I actually had him meet Jai Pataka Maharaj. And the son behaved like, you know, perfect. You know, he was like really cool and he really had a good time. And hopefully they'll come back. You know, Satya Dulal will hopefully be able to, you know, because he lives nearby, he can cultivate them. So that was a nice, you know, fruit result of the preaching. And then a couple, just quick updates on some other people. Mr. Lee, the Korean man from South Central, he rang me the other day, and he wants to start a business. He wants to open up another business. Something, you know, it's hard for me to kind of understand him 100%, especially on the phone, because his English is kind of like, you know, not the best, but he's, you know. What I got was he wants to open like a coffee shop or something like that, and he wants a devotee to manage it. So he's, you know, he really likes the devotees. He comes and gives a very nice donation once a month. First of the month, he just drops it in the hundi box and goes. He met Jai Pataka Maharaj last Tuesday. I had a nice little meeting there for a few minutes. And I found out it's something interesting. The whole time I was thinking, hey, this is some little guy from Korea just opened up some small business. But when I mentioned to him that Sachin Narayan asked me to go to Korea to distribute books there. As soon as I said that, he said, oh, yeah, you should go. You should go. He said, you'll do really good. The people there are really ready for something like this. He said, and I'll help you. He said, I'm the big man there. I'm well known. I said, well, it works out he was a pretty highly placed executive in Korean Airlines. And he was in the international division. And he's from a business family, you know. But he gave that up because he didn't want to sell his soul to the company store. You know, he was working as an executive for Korean Airlines, international division, but he found himself, you know, just like having to work till, rather than stopping at 5 o'clock, 5:30, he's working till 8, 9 o'clock every night. You know, you have to really go for it. You have to go through the hoops if you expect to, you know, keep your position and get promotions. So he saw what was, you know, developing. He said, I'm not going to do that my whole life. So he left that. He gave it all up and he came here to America and opened a convenience store in South Central. And, you know, trying to put his daughter through medical school. So anyway, so he likes the devotees, and was talking about opening up a business and having a devotee manage it, like something like a coffee shop. I have to talk to him more about that. And yesterday I was out at CSUN, Cal State University Northridge, and I popped into, you know, I saw this boy, and I said hello to him, like I do everybody, and he was giving me a big smile. You know, I said, what's going on here? And as I got close to him, I said, do I know you? He said, yeah, I was at your temple. And I said, oh, okay. Oh, he said, oh, yeah. I said, yeah, you were. He said, I was at the Sunday feast. I said, then I started to recognize him when he told me. I said, you were the fellow who was there with Mark. You know, I couldn't remember Mark. Said, that was the guy who we met who, when we were getting arrested, was sitting there waiting to talk to us because he had to get a Bhagavad Gita for one of his courses. And he wanted to get it. He felt he should get it. It's such an important spiritual book in a special way. So then he told that to somebody, and the fellow said, well, you should go out on the campuses because there's some Hare Krishnas there, and they're distributing Bhagavad Gitas. So he came out, and when he got out, they were being in the process of getting arrested. But he sat it out. He waited it out, and then we talked to him afterwards. He came back here to the temple, and he came three times. He came for a program at my home. He met Jai Pataka Maharaj, and then he came for Sunday feast. So anyway, he brought two friends when he came for the Sunday feast. So I bumped into one of the friends. And apparently, the friend told me that they're going this Saturday to the program in Laguna Beach. Because they heard that, I don't know how they heard, maybe Omkar, I don't know how, maybe they're on the email list. And maybe they received an email from Mother Pavaka. So he's going to go down there with, you know, this other fellow. So that was pretty good to hear that was going on. And the most recent one, about a week or so ago, we were going in down Inglewood Boulevard, which is kind of near the airport there, you know, like a Latino-Hispanic area. And I popped into one barbershop. And so, you know, these guys, I sense they were Spanish-speaking. That was their language, you know. So I handed them a Spanish SSR, and I said, un libro de meditation yoga, you know. And they go, okay, you know. And I opened to the picture of the horses and the lady on the chariot, that one, because it has a good caption. The caption says something about, the body is the chariot for the soul, and it's kind of very generic, but it kind of talks about the body and the soul, and they can really relate to that easily. So I usually ask people, well, read that, I just say, lee usted, por favor, can you read that? So this man took the book out of my hand. He was a short, chubby guy, and he took the book out of my hand, and he started reading it out loud, and loud. And there was like two or three other barbers in the shop and about two or three customers. And he starts reading it out loud. And I thought, uh-oh, no way. This guy's a born-again Christian, and he's going to give me a really hard time. He's going to make real. So he's reading it out loud. And then after he reads it, he starts talking. And I thought, in Spanish. So I couldn't completely understand what he was saying, but I understand a little Spanish. So I sort of felt, wait a second, it doesn't sound like he's, just from looking at him and hearing what he's saying and what I could pick up, it didn't sound unfavorable. It sounded like he was saying good stuff, So this Justo, I don't know if you all know Justo. Justo was with me. He speaks Spanish. And I looked at him. I said, what's going on? I said, he says, he's preaching about the Bhagavad Gita. I said, what do you mean? He says, he's explaining the philosophy to these two other barbers and the customers here. I said, well, how's that? He said, I don't know. And then Justo talked to him in Spanish. It worked out that this man had a Bhagavad Gita. He's from El Salvador. And he got Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita about 20 years ago. And he's been studying Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita for 20 years. And he knew it, like, inside and out. He was preaching to these other people in the barbershop and, like, nobody's business. So much so that while he was preaching, one of the customers leaned over to me and he said, I was holding the Bhagavad Gita in my hand. And he leaned over to me and said, he's a young guy, so are you selling that book? I said, well, no, we just asked for a donation. We're trying to share this with other people. He said, well, could I give you $15 for it? I said, yeah, sure. He gave me. So the man sold the Bhagavad Gita. I gave him. He took the Bhagavad Gita, and then we invited him to come, of course, to the temple for, I think, would have been Gaur Punim. So he didn't come, and I was kind of like, I was kind of disappointed. But I went back there. I went back there because I thought, well, this guy is something, because he seemed like he really did seem genuine, and Justo's confirmed that he was really, preaching properly. So I went back there. And I said, wait, what happened? He was there. I said, what happened? I was hoping you would come. He said, I tried to come. And what happened was he got here and he drove around for 2 hours. He couldn't actually find the place. The directions on the card were a little bit, I guess he was coming from a different direction or something. He couldn't. So he finally got here at 7 o'clock that evening. And by that time, it was all kind of winding up. So he just left. But I said, come again, come again. So he came this Sunday. And I introduced him to Mother Pavaka. She was able to speak to him in Spanish. And he came in. Naikatma saw him there. He was kind of like blissfully looking at the deities and the pictures on the ceiling, right? And all the devotees. He was just like taking it all in. And then after the kirtan, I introduced him to Radha Kripa so he could go for the Spanish class. So he takes him over there. And I said I'd meet him at 6 o'clock in the prasadam room, because I don't understand what they're talking about. So when I met him in the prasadam, I said to Radha Kripa, I said, how did it go? He said, he gave the class. I said, what do you mean? What do you mean? He said, I was feeling kind of tired. I was feeling kind of tired, so I asked for a volunteer to read the translation and the purport. So he volunteered, and after he read the translation and the purport, he started explaining it. I said, really? He said, yeah. I said, well, actually, I could believe you because that's what happened in the barbershop. I said, did he do a good job? He said, yeah. He said, really, he did like a really good job. And then he told me, he said, I thought he'd studied Bhagavad Gita for a year, but actually he's been studying it for 20 years, and there was 1 year when he didn't read it. So he said, he told me he'd been studying Bhagavad Gita for 20 years. Radha Kripa told me. So anyway, so we talked a little bit more, and hopefully he's going to come regularly. So it is possible. I was just thinking if every one of us, I'm always thinking, like, how do we spread this movement? But maybe it's just that we each have to individually take responsibility to try to, get somebody to become a devotee. And I was just playing around with some numbers. I was just thinking if everybody here, like, say there's 25 people here in this room now, approximately. If everybody here made one devotee this year, and if all the people of all those people that we double our number in 1 year, obviously, but and if all those people made one devotee that next year, and if all those people made one devotee next year, if you just go like that, numbers are powerful. Actually, within I figured it out, within 20 years, the entire city of Los Angeles would be Krishna conscious, and within 30 years, the whole world would be Krishna conscious. If one, you know, make one devotee a year, and every person who became a devotee made one devotee a year. So anyway, just some numbers. But does anybody have any questions or comments about any of these points? Okay, I think I'm out of time anyway. But thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thanks for coming. This is Dora the Explorer. No, it's just one of these notebooks my wife put in. Thank you, Martha. Yeah, I hope he comes. He had a good experience, so I mean, he lives close enough, so we'll hopefully keep your eyes open for him.